podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for All About Android is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of All About Android is brought to you by NatureBox, where you can order great-tasting, healthy snacks delivered right to your door. Forget the vending machine and get in shape with healthy, delicious treats like Cherry Berry Bonanza. To get 50% off your first box, go to naturebox.com/twit. That's naturebox.com/twit. And by lynda.com, learn what you want, when you want, with access to over 2,400 high-quality online courses, all for one low monthly price. To try it free for 7 days, visit lynda.com/allaboutandroid. That's lynda.com/allaboutandroid. And by 99 Designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 280,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/AAA to receive a free power pack upgrade valued at $99. Hello and welcome to another episode of All About Android, episode 156, recorded on Tuesday, April 8th, 2014. We're your weekly source for the latest news, hardware, and apps for the Android faithful. I'm Jason Howell.
I'm Ron Richards.
Say that again, Gina.
Uh-oh. I'm Gina Trapani.
There we go. Cool. Sorry, we had you muted there for a second. Apologies. I accept full blame. But I will say, it's awesome having the three of us back.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's good
reunion,
to be back.
Reunited.
Reunited feels so good. But we also are joined, actually, by a new guest to the show. Welcome to the show, Kevin Grant. He's the lead Android design engineer at Tumblr. Kevin, it's great to have you on.
Hey, guys. Nice to be here. Really happy. Really excited.
Yeah, no, this is great. And we actually... You know, you're joining for the whole show, so obviously we have a lot of news and rumors and crazy stuff to talk about. But we also have a very interesting kind of discussion that we're going to have in a little bit about design, specifically design for Android, kind of the do's, the don'ts, the rules, and whether those rules can be broken, all that kind of stuff. So, Kevin, thank you for reaching out. I think it's going to be a great conversation. It's great to have you on.
You guys are my people. Glad to be here.
Nice. We like our people. Fantastic.
So we do have a lot to get into. We're going to be talking all about Android TV. If you haven't heard about that, this is pretty interesting, juicy stuff. Amazon Fire TV, which we have right here. So they're kind of related, I'd say.
Yeah.
As I said, controversial Android design.
I love the idea of controversial Android design.
You put that word in there, it's like your ears go, bink.
Yeah.
And so much more. But before we get into what is replacing the news segment as the rumor segment, let's talk about a few things real quick here. First of all, today was supposed to be the beginning of Google I.O. registration.
Google I.O. apocalypse.
And apparently it's not happening. Not right now.
They pushed it back.
Pushed it back
a week. We don't really know why. Who knows why? Maybe they weren't ready.
Oops.
Get ready.
Just kidding. Yeah. Try again.
That's kind of a bummer, right? Because
it's definitely a hot topic around the office here because all of us are really anticipating to go this year, and we're all really anticipating all like the Android Wear stuff and the Google TV stuff. And so we with everyone else registering for WWDC right now, we're really excited to get going on this today, but we're going to have to wait.
Hey, so is WWDC registration opened up now? Do you think that's related to it?
I don't know.
I wondered about that.
Yeah.
I threw my hat in the ring for WWDC and didn't get a ticket. But it seems like there are similar processes where you say, hey, I want to go. And then they pick you by lottery and you get yes or no. And I got the sad plain text email. Maybe Google's looking. I don't know. It's hard to think that Google was looking at what Apple was doing and thinking, oh, maybe we should do something differently. It sounds like just they found a last minute bug.
Yeah, maybe. Today was also the San Diego Comic-Con hotel reservation lottery that happened at 9 a.m. And in 20 minutes, they were gone.
Wow.
So, yeah. So today was a big day for lotteries, for registration lotteries, apparently. Yeah.
9-5 Google is kind of parsing Google's language from the Google Plus post where they said that it was being delayed and saying that it kind of sounds like it may be a problem with the registration process. They say we're still working to make the registration process even easier for you.
could be, you know, spin of some sort.
Well, but if that's the case, probably better off than not. Could you imagine if there was a problem and
especially
because like,
they did this change specifically to avoid problems and issues that have arisen.
Yeah, we don't want another. What happened when the phone went on, when the Nexus 4 went on sale? Do you remember the Google Play Store couldn't handle all the load and it was falling
that's
over?
That's just one example.
That's just, exactly. So, I mean, get it right. I think that's fine. I think they can wait a week. Nerds can wait a week.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And in other news that actually isn't necessarily Android specific, but worth mentioning here, if you haven't already heard about Heartbleed, it's a bug in OpenSSL, which happens to be the encryption method that's used by around 50% of internet websites. This bug allows someone to gain access to chunks of data sitting in system memory on any system running OpenSSL. So if you thought you're protected, it's possible that you're not. It's worth mentioning that Steve Gibson, Security Now, they had an episode earlier today and had an exhaustive look at Heartbleed. So if you do not know what this is, you should know that it's something that's very serious, and you are going to have to change your passwords on most of your important accounts at some point. The question is, you know, does it do any good doing it now before it's patched on the server side or not? Ultimately, just check out Security Now, episode 450. You can go to twit.tv/SN450. Fascinating episode all about the topic. And if you want to check some sites and see whether they are susceptible to this, LastPass has a site that they put up. It's lastpass.com/heartbleed. And you can check out the URLs and see, you know, which ones are vulnerable. So,
what is that again?
Lastpass.com/heartbleed. Kevin, you said your office was... Well, I guess every office I imagine is just a flutter with this news. Right?
Tumblr, we were definitely on high alert today.
Yeah,
like most everybody else, we were affected by it. But I think that we were on it. The teams were on maybe 5:30, 4:30 this morning here in New York. So we take it very seriously.
Sure. So, anyways, worth noting. There are places, you know, including Security Now, where you can find out more information. So do check that out. So. No need to run the news intro, Brian, because this isn't really news. This is more like a rumor block, and I don't have a rumor bumper. I wish
that
I could.
Should make a rumor bumper.
Yeah, someone should come up. Yeah, we should just say this nonchalantly, and then maybe they'll appear suddenly. A rumor bumper.
Yeah.
Rumor bumper. Let's say that just a few more times. Okay.
Yeah.
Good. Ron. Rumor number one.
When this happens, I curiously look over at Brian because he started moving, and I was like, "Oh, maybe they have a rumor bumper that I don't know about." And I got really excited, and I'm realizing now that's not the case.
No.
It's that time of year. You might not be able to register for Google I/O, but we sure can start speculating about some of the rumors that are going to happen of the things that are going to be announced there. Interestingly enough, The Verge came across some exclusively obtained documents with the scoop about Android TV. Me as a big Google TV fan, this caught my eye. And basically from these exclusively obtained documents at The Verge, it revealed that Google says that Android TV is an entertainment interface, not a computing platform. And it's all about finding and enjoying content with the least amount of friction. It'll be cinematic, fun, fluid, and fast. I got a real problem when intercompany documents say it's going to be fun.
They throw in their marketing inside the
right. Yeah, it's gonna be whimsical. But nonetheless, it says the look and feel like other set top boxes in the market. Developers are asked to create simple TV apps for a simple set top box. Scrolling cards will show movies, shows, apps, games on shelves. The controller will have a four-way directional pad, enter, home, and back, which is similar to a lot of the modern remotes we've seen, such as the Amazon Fire.
The Amazon Fire remote, which has a few more buttons than that. But
still
this is
really similar. voice input and notification support. And basically, Android TV revolves around Google's recommendations for what you might want to watch or play, which makes sense considering it knows what you're searching for and that sort of thing. You can resume content across devices, which is always very cool. And this I found really interesting. Never more than 3 clicks or gestures to go from home screen to new content. So they're really minimizing the level of effort it takes to watch something, which I go through every time I buy something on my Google TV. I want to watch House Hunters, and I got to click. I got to search for House Hunters, and I got to go to the season, and I got to buy the thing. And what drives me crazy is that you buy the content and you pay for it, and then it goes back, and then I got to go back and press play. And it goes, "Are you sure you want to play?" And it's like, "Yes, I just bought it. I want to play it." But it, of course, since it's Google, it's going to have universal search and in-app search from within the interface. No support for NFC cameras, telephony, or touchscreen in an effort to keep developers focused on the task at hand.
Interesting.
So that looks like the future of entertainment, according to Google, could be Apple Android TV.
According to sources.
Well, yeah. What do we think? Is this real? Or is this legit? Or is it BS? What do you know?
Yeah, I'm still parsing that first line. It's an entertainment interface, not a computing platform. Does that mean that Android TV is going to run on other devices? I mean, that sounds like an app to me. To say it's an interface and not, but that doesn't make sense. Right?
I think they're trying to make distance from the Google TV, which if we all know very intimately, you know, like I have the Sony Blu-ray player with Google TV with the controller with the keyboard, and the Logitech Review came with a full 101 key keyboard. I think they're trying to move away from that kind of perception and more towards the Roku, Apple TV, Android Fire.
Yeah, it's not a computer on your TV. It's an actual entertainment device that's specifically designed to just entertain you with these things.
Yeah.
What do you think, Kevin?
I'm curious about how this sort of plays into their Chromecast strategy, because we have this beautiful Chromecast that all of us have invested in. Is this going to replace Chromecast? Is this going to include Chromecast? I think that they really nailed it with Chromecast, and I think that they obviously know that something went fundamentally wrong with Google TV.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious what they're going to bring to the table that sort of removes us from that Google TV era and takes us forward maybe in a dual Chromecast device world. I'm not exactly sure.
Well, I mean, Google TV and Chromecast do work. I mean, like, technically, my Google TV, I can Chromecast to it. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it has the similar functionality. You know, and it's a good question is how the two play together, if at all. And I know for a fact that Google and the Chrome team are really focused on Chromecast and what that does in terms of extending the desktop and expanding the Chrome experience. But I really see them almost as two different things because, with Google TV, it seems like they're Chromecast. I mean, Chromecast is great. We all love it. We all praise it. But I keep finding holes in it. I hooked it up to my TV this weekend. Remember, I said I'm going to use it more. So I hooked up to my TV. I watched some YouTube videos. That's great. Whatever. And then I had a friend over to the house, and she was like, "Oh, I want to watch something," and pulled out her iPad. I'm like, "Oh, install the Chromecast app. You can cast it." And Xfinity doesn't support Chromecast. Her Xfinity app on the iPad, and so it didn't work. And so it's like, well, I can't Chromecast it. You know, so Chromecast still has got a last mile problem in that the Chromecast support needs to be implemented by the application developer.
Which they're working on.
Which they're working on. That's ramping up. Yeah, exactly. But do we see Comcast doing it anytime soon on the Xfinity?
That's a really good point.
Yeah. So I kind of see it as bridging the gaps. And the thing is, they built all this infrastructure into the Google Play Store. And $5 says there's somebody at Google who's like, we need to increase people converting on the Google Play Store. More people should be renting movies. More people should be buying TV and that sort of thing. And this is probably a way to do that.
Yeah.
But wouldn't part of the problem from the example with the Comcast is that's part of what Google TV didn't really get right. And that's that the partnerships with the networks is really hard to work out. And I feel like that they don't want to deal with that anymore. So Chromecast couldn't fix that even if it wanted to.
Right. No, agreed. Yeah, totally. Yeah. It boils down less about technology and interfaces and platforms and more about business and agreements and all that sort of stuff. But
I feel like if Android TV came out and didn't have Chromecast capability,
that'd be nuts.
Then they've failed to drop the ball. But what I actually don't mind the fact that they coexist, because the way I look at it is that Chromecast is, at least as it is right now, the entry point. It's the entry point for Google into your living room. It's it's like a little bit of crack. It kind of gets you through the door. The Android TV is the bigger experience. It's what you already have with your Chromecast, but it also actually plays games on your TV. And it also, you know, has these things, you know, in a different interface, different sort of way. If Android TV is what it promises to be or supposedly promises to be, and then at the same time, it's just as easy for you to pick up your phone with your Netflix app and on a whim go, I'll just send this, boom, done.
Yeah.
Then it's a pretty powerful device, I think.
Although what you just described sounds a whole heck of a lot like the Amazon Kindle Fire TV.
No doubt.
It sounds a lot like Google TV. And the thing is, I bet you that if this Google TV is the new Google TV, if it doesn't come, if it's not like, if it doesn't have the Chromecast already in the box, then yeah, they failed. I'm sure they're going to roll that.
Oh, there's no way that they wouldn't.
I'd be exactly.
Bet $100. Maybe I shouldn't do that, but I would.
The dream of Android TV for me, though, is like that Google does for TV shows and movies what it did for the web, which is like, I don't have to know that to watch Orange is the New Black, I have to go to Netflix, and Game of Thrones, I have to go to HBO.
Right.
And to do, you know, like we know, we have to think of the app or the carrier or the place first. And then, you know, I just want to say, I want to watch this show
and
go.
Honestly,
and it does that for me.
I think if this is real, I think that's probably what you're going to get much closer to. Because if you remember, a couple of months ago, suddenly we heard the news about Google enabling you to search within inside apps.
Yep.
Right, your search can now reach into apps. So what does that gain you? Potentially, that gains you access to search within Netflix
within
to
Hulu,
know what's within their library and whatever. So then it's just a matter, you know. And also along with that, yes, search is very powerful, and there will be voice search here, and hopefully it's very well integrated and implemented so that it just works every time, so that you can depend on it and everything. But what they also want this to be, and this is a big theme in Google right now with Android, is they want it to be predicting what you want before you think you want it.
They want me to turn on the Google, to come home, turn on the Google TV, and be like, do you want to watch The Good Wife? Yeah. And I would say yes. I'd say yes, Google. And then it would happen. Mm-hmm. And that would be fantastic. Yeah. Whether or not it happens or not, I mean, who knows? I mean, they did highlight the fact that it's three clicks or gestures from the home screen to new content.
Mm-hmm.
So what are those three kind of gestures or, you know, search,
well, I mean,
select, play?
Exactly, yeah. With search. Or if they're putting up recommendations, it's click to accept it and hit play, you know, or click for more info and hit play to watch it.
Well, whatever it is, if it exists or doesn't exist, just tell me where to write the check.
I knew of all people this would excite you.
I don't know why I go gaga for this stuff. I love this stuff. I love it. I think it's I think and it cracks me up, especially also – have you been reading all the documents that came out of the Apple-Samsung lawsuit? There's all these in Discovery, all these documents came out, and there's a ton of Apple strategy documents, and trying to highlight the, you know, the whatever. But in that is some of their discussion, Steve Jobs years ago talking about Apple TV and what Apple TV needs to do to succeed.
Right.
And like all of these companies, and I always go back, and I know I always say it, when I visited Microsoft up in Redmond or Bellevue or wherever they are by Seattle, like what now it's like 10 years ago when they showed the living room of the future, run all by Windows, and all stuff. Like everyone's been trying to figure this out for decades and no one has, and I just keep waiting. Maybe this is the one that'll do it. Maybe this is the one that'll do it. And so we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Let's move on to rumor number two.
All right.
This is codename Hera. This is very interesting.
Dun,
dun, dun, dun. No. Rumor number two. Bah. Information obtained by Android police. They feel very confident in this information, though they do warn that they know that it is incomplete. And it's kind of interesting when you read it. I had to read through it a couple of times to kind of get a sense for exactly what it is. But here's what they say. Hera is Google's effort to unify Android, Chrome, and search.
Ooh.
On an Android device. It's facilitated via a special Chromium build running on Android that's, you know, dedicated to this kind of process here. Multitasking in this case is handled via HTML5. That's for quick execution of tasks without using the full app. So through your multitasking and, you know, outside of the app, you can do a lot, perform a lot of the functions that you can within the app without having to launch into it. Screenshots that you see here suggest a new Android design direction with Chromium instances matching the style of the native Android style, which makes them indecipherable in your multitasking view. So all this stuff is happening. It's kind of like this, the unification of HTML5 and your Android apps within Android, but you never really know the difference because it all kind of looks the same the way it's treated through the OS. And this actually matches some leaked Gmail images that were leaked late last week, which I kind of like ignored for a while until I read about this later.
See,
I was
context.
Like, okay, because the design approach is very similar on these. And I'm not sure if these that are on Android Police are, you know, Android Police's kind of you know how sometimes
reposting
they get these leaks and instead of posting the exact source, they kind of redesign it themselves to show you kind of what it looks like so that they're not revealing too much. Anyways, think of it as Chrome Desktop Sync, or what Chrome Desktop Sync does now, but for everything within Google, essentially. And, you know, they wrote this up. This kind of encapsulates it perfectly. Android Police said, if you begin a task on another device, mobile, desktop, Hera would add that into the new multitasking view as a card like the ones they've shown on the page. But it will also be able to incorporate tasks usually handled by apps. So if you had maps open on your tablet showing directions to a place and you forgot the address, there would already be a Hera instance in your multitasking view with the same activity on whatever device you happen to be on. So kind of a head scratcher at first to really kind of understand the approach. But ultimately, I think what it boils down to is if this ends up happening, yes, HTML5 kind of coexisting in a functional way and not like as its own separate kind of, you know, half good as a regular app sort of way, integrated deep into the OS in a way that makes it difficult for you to recognize that it's happening, and possibly a full kind of refresh to the look and feel of Android as a result of it.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
That's a lot to take in.
It is a lot to take in.
We start calling this Chrome Droid.
All right.
Or and Chrome. I don't know.
I don't know. Does it excite you, Gina? Anything exciting about that?
I'm still kind of getting my head around what this actually is and what it means. I mean, I think what it means from the big picture is this kind of starting to like unification or the beginning of the unification of Chrome and Android, which even Google has pretty much acknowledged that it's weird that they have these two giant, you know, open source operating system type things running in parallel, right? Like at one of the Google IOs, if it's not this year, the next year, there's going to be more of this sort of, you know, marriage going on. Again, I'm still trying to getting my head around what this means. I mean, it sounds like Chrome will be as baked into Android the way that Internet Explorer was baked into Windows. It's like everything old is new again. But I think it's exciting. I love to see the cross-device functionality because we all have multiple devices. And I like Chrome. I like Android. And I certainly look up directions on one device and then need to look it up again on another. So that sounds good.
Yeah. It's interesting. Kevin, any thoughts? What do you think about this?
I just love I read some of the comments on the post about the new design direction that sort of people are gathering from these screenshots. And it's just funny to see how people react so quickly to just minor changes in design. For example, like the hamburger icon is now not quite off to the side, but now it's sort of in the center. And so quickly people jump right on the, that's not how it's supposed to be. What are you doing? I find it really funny.
I did note that mentally when I was looking at it. I was like, oh, the hamburger menu moved. So also circular avatars, they're everywhere.
It's the thing, Ron.
Yeah, I know, it is the thing.
Round avatars.
I mean, they've got to be building this bridge sooner or later. If this is the method that it is, then if that's how they're going to do it, it sounds pretty neat. I mean, Google's whole, what they drive home, again, also, you know, the Chrome team, is that it's, you know, a seamless experience across all your devices.
Mm-hmm.
And this sounds like it does it. So who knows? It'll be interesting.
Yeah.
I'll be curious to see them explain this up on stage at I.O.
Yeah. Can you imagine if this entire block was explained at I.O.?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, wow, we had that on episode 156.
Well, that gets no comment, but I have it after the next story.
So, Gina, you have rumor number three.
Rumor number three, Android Silver. Android Police obtained slides from a reliable source. And some of the info is from the end of the last year, so it might be a little bit dated. It might be completely out of date. But just in case it isn't, Android Silver, which I guess would be an internal code name, this is Google's attempt to improve support on key devices. So qualified devices that Google would handpick would run the latest versions of Android with no or very limited customizations, which we've seen Google moving toward. With certain certain manufacturers, and like I said, only 5 such devices would be qualified, and then be an Android Silver display in carrier stores, touting the availability of the network. Google would manage this, and they would train staff on how to sell these devices. Carrier staff would help customers to migrating their data and complete setup of a new device in under 5 minutes, with Google's nothing slips through the cracks, air quotes, guaranteed. pointing to a possible rebranding of the Android device manager as Never Lost for device retrieval, lock, rename, suspend service, backup. Basically, Silver customers would have access to a Hangout Assistant, which is basically like Amazon's Mayday service with 24/7 live Hangout supports.
Totally see that.
So this is kind of interesting. This sounds like a possible way that Google is, you know, combating the fragmentation issue, or the issue of phones getting shipped with Android and a bunch of crapware. It sounds like this is a way to incentivize manufacturers to not customize Android too much. But again, this is all just a rumor. If the name actually did have the word Android in it, or, you know, if it was actually called Android Silver or something similar, it'd be interesting that Google would start selling Android as a brand, which they really haven't done very much so far. Not, at least not the way they do with Chrome.
Well, and I mean, that kind of might fall in line with some of the other stuff that we've seen very recently. In fact, last week we were talking about Powered by Android.
Yep.
Last week mm-hmm. or the week before, as part of the boot up sequence on some newer phones and kind of going forward. So it seems like, I think what's kind of going on right now is that Google is really realizing the power of the name, that the mass amount of people, you know, may not have known what Android was, and it sounded funky and everything, but now we're like 5 years into this grand experiment, and Android's pretty darn influential at this point. So, you know, seize the day, Google.
I'll tell you what's done the worst for the Android brand, if you ask me. The biggest damage to the Android brand has been Verizon's Droid line.
Oh,
because well, the
yeah.
number of people
early
they're,
on,
they're
too,
like,
right?
"Oh, you rocking a Droid," and I'm just like, "Oh god." Hey,
that was a powerful play though at the beginning though, yeah. because that got yep. people to see that there was an alternative,
yeah.
A viable alternative to the crazy stuff that was happening with Apple's iPhone.
Yeah,
and so that was right. like the direct competitor at that point. So it was good then,
yeah.
but it had a lasting impression that may not have been the best thing for the brand. You're right. What do you think about this, Kevin?
I'm excited for this, actually, because I just bought my grandmother a Chromebook maybe a few months ago to
wow.
replace her desktop computer.
Mm-hmm.
And she doesn't have a smartphone, and actually my mother doesn't have a smartphone either. And I'm reluctant to buy them an Android phone just because I know how easy it is to get my phone into a state where it can be confusing.
Sure.
And especially when all of their other friends have iPhones and stuff. There's no one that they can turn to get this type of help. And so with a program like this, I'd be more comfortable buying my family members' phones like these so that they could sort of join in, you know, with their son and their grandson has been developing over this weird company.
I mean, is it really just Google's response to the Genius Bar? Like, is it to provide that level of support? Mm-hmm. You know, like, is it, I know it's not going that far in terms of being consumer kind of facing and that sort of thing, but like providing a common base that people can build off of, and then the carriers can then support from there, you know?
I suppose so. Yes. I hadn't really thought of it. Yeah. That way.
Maybe it's about bringing the Google Android experience from power users who are going to buy an unlocked phone in the Play Store to regular people.
I think you nailed it right there, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially if they're going as far as they are in this example with just marketing it to the T inside carrier stores and saying, you know, this is Android Silver. It's brandished with a shield, or, you know, some sort of thing that signifies that, like, oh, if I get an Android phone, that's obviously the one to get. That looks official, you know?
Right. So, right. And they'll apparently walk through creating a Google account with new users, too.
Yeah.
So it is really easy.
And they want
for,
it to
like,
last only 5 minutes, you know, 5 minutes
wow.
to do all this stuff.
Jeez,
so it's interesting. It's an interesting approach to kind of tackle that support side of things,
which is very important. It's important.
Yeah, absolutely.
So before we move on.
Yes, Ron.
Who are these sources? Like, these are three stories in a row where, like, The Verge and Android Police, like, listen, we've talked to reliable sources. Do we got some leaks in the Google ship?
Well,
no doubt.
Absolutely.
I know we always get rumors and we get little kind of trickles and like, oh, I saw this in the wild or the whatever. But like, these are screenshots and these are like this documents is proprietary and for like, I kind of feel a little awkward even talking about it. You know what I mean? Like, it's like,
welcome to technology on the internet.
Yeah, but
this
like
technology news on the internet. It seems, I mean, you know, and it's possible that a lot of this stuff is just marketing. Like, it's absolute marketing from the inside. Somebody in the chat room was saying that about...
Well, that's
what
like
was
with,
it
the
about?
Next, with the Nexus 5. That was all marketing.
About
remember?
Android TV. Well, when you think about the market, the terms that they use on, quote, internal documents for Android TV that sound very marketing speak.
It's going to be fast
So it's
fun.
Interesting that it suddenly leaks out and it becomes a marketing, you know, campaign.
Yeah.
Because those words were in there, so everybody's repeating them.
I mean, like, don't get me wrong. My day job industry is rife with rumors and people leaking things and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And I get there are disgruntled people who are like, oh, I'm going to stick it to who I work for. But, like, in this day and age with a company like Google, I feel like it's – I mean, this I could understand like 2 weeks before Google I/O because that's when they're running through the presentation and like some janitor at Moscone could see something, see the wrong thing. But like this is some eye opening stuff. I mean, this turns out to be true. That's crazy.
I sort of imagine that it's some sort of it's some indignant like Android team member who's like sick of getting dinged about fragmentation and bad user experience.
Yeah,
you know, who just kind of wants to be like, hey, we're thinking about this, we're working on this. Like, here are some slides from, you know, 9 months ago that are really kind of meaningless right now. But look, we are thinking about this.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe. Never anyway, done. I'm sorry. I just wanted to know that. Just seemed very odd.
It's definitely good to bring up because half the time you don't know whether you're repeating a planned marketing message or if it's an actual leak or if it doesn't even exist.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many times we've talked about things as rumor on this show because it's fun to talk about. And then I go back to show notes from like a year and a half ago and I go, oh, that was cute.
My favorite was when they played us with the Nexus 5. That was all. We got played with the Nexus 5. The mistake in the picture of the guy taking the photo. Oh, what is that? Like, that was all planted. Right. All planted. I'll get proof.
And then we got blindsided by Kit Kat.
Yeah, exactly. True. Anyway, I'm sorry. Okay. Controversial. Right.
Let's get controversial.
Do we have a controversial bumper?
Dun, 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 dun.
Nailed it.
You are the lead, as I already said, the lead Android design engineer for Tumblr. And you reached out to me a week and a half ago, and said, hey, you know, I'm me. I do talk about this stuff. I talk about controversial Android design. And I thought to myself, that sounds intriguing. Again, controversial. It's an intriguing word. Yeah. So why don't we just kind of start this off? What is your talk normally about when you talk about this kind of stuff? What is your angle when it comes to Android design?
So a lot of what I like that one.
Yeah, that was good. That was really good.
Bravo, Brian. Bravo.
Redemption. It feels good, doesn't it, Brian? Sorry, so Kevin.
It's okay. A lot of what I try and do encourage and talk about with other developers is that Google has given us a very specific set of guidelines, these hollow guidelines. And they run a great web series called Design in Action. Where they go over what they think are beautiful applications, what they think are bad design patterns. And really, this is the only outlet that Android developers have publicly to get their designs critiqued. And a lot of what I try and I talk about and what I tell people is that Google doesn't have to be the only authority when you're designing an application. Google provides amazing framework and some great guidelines, but just because that's what Google says, that doesn't mean that's what you have to do. And I like to talk about a lot of different things, sort of like the drawer and pull to refresh, action buttons on the screen, things that Google never provided up front, but have adopted over the years because the community wanted them and the community built it itself. So I like to talk about people and sort of help them understand that just because Google says it's a bad idea, doesn't mean that it's a bad idea necessarily.
Would you say that if Google says these are the things that you should do, that you should do them? Or like, I mean, I understand where you're coming from. I think what I can feel in my head is a massive amount of listeners and viewers of this show writing an email right now, because I know that people stamp hard in the steadfast rule of Google has the guidelines. Follow the guidelines. Android design is unique to something like iOS. Why are these companies, you know, designing apps that don't follow the hamburger and the, you know, swipe left to right and all those kind of things? Like, when is it okay to break those rules and when is it not okay to break those rules, would you say?
That's always a really fine line. And I think that when you choose to break a rule or when you choose to go away from a design pattern, that you should talk about this with your designers, with your fellow employees, or the people you're developing your application with. And you say, does it make sense? Like, is this really the best way that we can display our content? Or is this the best way we can display our user experience? Or even taking it a step further, which people don't like to talk about, and is this the best way we can represent our brand? We're designing applications for us or for our companies. We're not designing applications for Google. So it's important not to put Android before your brand.
Well, that's really interesting. I mean, so you're applying a value to the brand representation through design over a UX kind of importance?
There's definitely a marriage that needs to happen. And so, especially as Android users, especially as power users, I've been an Android developer since 2009. Like, this is my bread and butter. So if anybody is a staunch design guidelines person that would take it seriously, it would be me. And I think what I've learned after being at Tumblr here for a little over a year is that the applications that are doing well today, they're not always following the guidelines to a T, and they're being rewarded for not following them. And they're being rewarded with more downloads, with more coverage about innovative design. And they're being rewarded because their paradigms are being integrated back into the Android platform.
Sure. Now, you included a couple of apps to kind of show off, to kind of illustrate your point. Very good apps here. Let's start with Pocket Cat.
I can't believe, like, because as I'm driving up here, I'm like making a mental note, I need to bring up Pocket Cast for the very reason Kevin meant. So I'll let him tell it. But like, it's eerie. The fact, like, today I was like, oh, I need to talk to Jason about that. So Kevin, tell us, why is Pocket Cast cool?
So Pocket Cast, I'll pull it up on my tablet and kind of show it off. And yeah, just to kind of talk about your thoughts as far as their design and their approach.
Yeah, so as a New Yorker, I'm listening to podcasts every single day on the subway. But Pocket Cast did a recent redesign of their application. And what they're doing is something that we're seeing as a design trend across the board. Not so much in Android, but we're seeing it on the web and we're seeing it on iOS. And that is a highlighting of accent colors. And so what does a highlighting of an accent color mean? Well, that means when you click into some show, he's taking the average color of that show's banner or the dominant color, and they're applying that to the controls there. So you see all the buttons on the All About Android are green. If you went and actually to go play that, the scrubber would be green. Basically, it's picking those accent colors and adjusting the user interface to accommodate for that. So we hear a lot about this putting content first and putting content before the interface and before the Chrome. But I'd like to see more, and we are seeing more, of this content adaptive interface, where the interface adapts for the content that you're seeing to sort of not necessarily get away from all of the Chrome, but to make the Chrome feel like it belongs to that specific content.
You see how here I'm listening to Nerdist, unfortunately, and the scrubber bar is yellow. Whereas if I go to another show, like when I go to Star Wars Minute, and stream that, it changes to, yeah, it picks up the gray. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm actually looking at this really close and realizing the play, it's hard to see, but it is attached.
Yeah.
To,
so here, there's the, on my old show, iFanboy, the scrubber bar is red, which is matching the red in the logo.
That's cool. I like that.
Now what's really fascinating about this is that he did not get this for free. He put in he or she, I don't actually know the developer. They put in a significant amount of work to achieve this aesthetic look. And what this does is this is bringing a more unified experience, a content-first experience to these applications. And moving forward, I think people are going to start expecting these sort of adaptive interfaces that are respecting the colors and the styles of what you're actually looking at.
I got to tell you, when I realized the accent color was changing based off the cover art of the podcast, I was out running last weekend, and I just I noticed the play button had changed, and I was like, wait a minute, that's red, and the other one was blue, and then I did it a couple times. That blew my mind. And the thing was, I'd been using the app for at least, you know, I don't know how many days or weeks before I noticed it, because it just kind of seamlessly worked. But the moment I kind of saw through it and realized what was happening, I thought it was so cool. So that's a great little touch
subtle, but
it's effective. A subtle detail.
Yeah.
I would worry about a red play button though, or even like a red pause button. Cause you know, like a red button in a player is record, you know, in my brain. I worry about, and this is generally what I worry about deviating away from Google's guidelines is, making the interface, you know, confusing, you know, or having a, tack on a little tutorial, like click here, swipe here in order to do this. Whereas if you go with the guidelines, the defaults, which I really think, and I agree with you, Kevin, like I think those exist for developers who just want to make an app that does something, you know, that's like instantly understandable because it looks like every other app. When you're building and branding, and when you're, you know, trying to innovate, it totally makes sense to go beyond the guidelines. But I always worry about to being too fancy at the expense of being no longer being intuitive.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's definitely a trade-off, and you have to make smart, educated and meaningful design decisions when you're doing things like this.
Absolutely. Now, the second example that you sent was Jelly, which is a recently released app. We've talked about it on the show in the past. It's basically, it's created by the same folks behind Twitter, right?
Yep.
And it's a question answer sort of thing. What exactly strikes you about this interface? It's definitely different, you know, versus any other app on Android. It's got its own aesthetic for sure. What did you think about this one?
So the fascinating thing about Jelly, and Jelly is doing something, a lot of Jelly's, what you understand about Jelly is in its interface. It's what we call a gestural interface, mm-hmm. where we're not sort of navigating with the traditional navigation paradigms. They developed a completely unique navigation system to go in and out of cards, to bring cards up and down, to bring answers from the bottom. This is completely unseen on almost any modern Android app that you're seeing today. And there is a significantly non-trivial amount of work that went into this. So for people who would be quick to critic that this doesn't really feel like an Android app, or this doesn't really fit into the Android design guidelines, I would challenge them to think, what do applications look like in 2 years from now, in 3 years from now? Are we still going to be restricted by pseudo buttons on a glass touchscreen, or can we think beyond what buttons can do and how we can use gestures to navigate our applications?
Mm-hmm. Cool stuff. Yeah, Jelly, definitely like their approach here. It's interesting when I really think about some of the apps that I do like, they don't always necessarily follow the design aesthetic that Google put out, even though I feel like a part of me has always been pretty steadfast to that, just because that's what Google says.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Kevin's point is accurate, which is like rules are almost made to be broken. Is that like you get innovation mm-hmm. through breaking those rules, and it's the balance of what is important from an application design standpoint, whether like we talked about, whether it's branding or functionality or to mm-hmm. get things across. And if somebody says, listen, you can only do this, but you want to do something else that no one's ever done before, you still should do it just because the guidelines say you shouldn't. You know, I do think that commonality of fonts and size, you know, like I think those are the basis that we build across, so that, you know, it has an identity as a platform, but like, you know, break as many rules as you can, because you never know what you might get.
Although those guidelines came out of the need for some sort of direction too, which is kind of an interesting thing to, you know, fence to straddle there, because on one hand, like, I completely agree with you, you know, an app, a corporation or a company that's making an app, you know, they want to have their own identity and everything. So that's great. But for the up and comer, the person that's just getting into developing, if they didn't have some sort of guideline or some sort of thing to compare against, then we have the Wild West that we had, you know, 3 years ago on Android, where everything looked different and not in necessarily a good way.
Right.
But I guess the platform was very early then too. So it was a challenge to make things look great.
And I think this is a great segue, actually, into the next application that I wanted to discuss.
Sure. Let's go. Let's see here. Instagram.
So Instagram, who just came out with a recent update to their Android application, where many people probably would have thought, hey, we're redesigning the application. Maybe it's a good time to put the action bar at the top of the screen. Maybe we should have that conversation. But I think what's interesting is if you take a look at Instagram's history, and where did Instagram start out at? Instagram was popular as an iPhone app long before it was ever an Android app. And even when it came out on Android, that was around the time when we had Gingerbread, right? And that's when Gingerbread really couldn't design its way out of a paper bag.
Right.
and so does Instagram not adopt or not continue its branding that from its wildly successful iPhone app onto another platform? Does it really need to change the way it looks and feels just to accommodate a system that maybe it isn't necessarily native to? I don't think there is a right answer here, but clearly you can tell by Instagram's installs on the Play Store that action bar across the bottom is certainly not hurting their installs.
Sure.
So that's a very hard case, and that's a really tough one. I struggle with this one a lot on whether or not I think that they should or shouldn't change. But regardless of that, I think they made a beautiful app, and it was a beautiful redesign. I like all of the accents that they put in. I like the redesign of the camera. So I would challenge people, before they quickly dismiss Instagram as a poorly designed Android application, think of it as a an application that actually has a lot of thought in its design, because they're not, they don't want to make poorly designed applications over at Instagram. I'm sure that they battled this out internally for months and months and months.
I have a question now that I'm thinking about it. A lot of design, a lot of apps have been created iOS first, right? So their design kind of wraps around the tools and the approach that iOS, you know, that they get from starting on iOS. How do you think that influences, and is it a no-no to bring your iOS design over to Android and just ignore that Android is a different platform?
Definitely today, I would say it's a no-no. I think this is something I struggle with on a daily basis, being a lead Android designer here over at Tumblr, where Tumblr is a very predominantly iPhone ecosystem. But we have wonderful designers here who sort of understand the nuances and the differences between each platform. And we try to push the boundaries and try and keep it as true to what Android means to us as we can. So we make a lot of decisions that aren't necessarily Android first, and we make a lot of decisions that are not easy to do, and they take us a significant amount of time. But we don't let that shy us away from doing what we think is right to move the platform forward.
Sure, sure. And one really great question that came up in the chat room from Byron, can you talk about how innovative, in quotes, innovative design affects accessibility in general, or for the blind, when you go aside from the guidelines that Google's put out, are you negatively impacting the app, or are there ways to make sure that you include folks who need that accessibility?
That's a really fantastic question, and I think that accessibility across the board is something that a lot of developers are not putting first and foremost. Mm-hmm. Even Tumblr, I'm ashamed to admit that we don't have the best accessibility support in our application. I wouldn't say that that's due to our design choices. I would just say that it's due to the fact that we haven't put the effort that we should. And that's actually something we're doing as one of our goals coming up. I think that the framework has really great solutions on how to make your application accessible for people with disabilities, for a varying range of disabilities. And I don't think that an innovative design really hinders that experience. So for example, Jelly, I'm sure that Jelly has a way of navigating through the use of arrow keys or through the use of any sort of keyboard commands to go up and down between those cards. And I would imagine that even if they didn't have that type of stuff isn't too hard to implement. It's more about making it a priority than it is about being hard to do.
Sure. Awesome. Well, those are great examples, and I knew this would be really interesting. I love the design stuff because I'm so brain dead when it comes to design. I know you, and that's the thing about design, right? You know good design when you see it.
Yeah, you know good design
and you play around with it, and it's intuitive and all that kind of stuff.
I mean, I feel like we could almost do like a whole special show just like going through apps and like critiquing and docking the design, and I'm sure Kevin has tons of feedback on that stuff, but it's fascinating. I mean, it's the kind of thing where it can really make or break an app. I mean, I'll download, and I mean, when we're looking in the arena, the first thing I'm looking for is what is the UI, and you know the apps I've tried to find, like, what does the UI look like? Are they pushing any boundaries? Are they trying to, you know, have a new approach to visualizing something? So it's fascinating.
Yeah.
I definitely don't like, for a lottery, I've been doing Android development for so long now, and I know how painful it is to implement these designs. And I know how, especially when you have friends who are doing iOS development and they said, oh, can't you just use the core animation library? I said, oh, wouldn't that be nice? Like, or doesn't it just backport to Gingerbread? And I'm like, wouldn't that be nice? So I feel the pains. And good design and unique design is not easy. I'm not here to tout that it's you can just do it overnight or that it's just going to happen. But I do think that it's definitely worth it. And I think by creating new design paradigms, creating things that Google didn't necessarily give to you, is something that's going to help us move the platform forward. And we can help shape the operating system of next year or 2 years. We don't have to wait for Google to build pull to refresh for us. We already had pull to refresh. They're just giving it to us for the heck of it. We already had drawer implementations before they gave us the drawer. So I'd want to challenge all of the developers to come up with these new paradigms. And then you can sort of take that legacy that you were the one who developed, you know, the new weird swipe left, right library that Google didn't have and that they implemented into the framework.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And there are definitely examples of that.
That's for sure.
Yeah. Where apps did something and then, hey, what do you know? A year later, it's just part of what you see in Google.
Amazing how that happens.
In Android. Yeah. Cool stuff. Well, Kevin, thank you for that. It was a great conversation. And there's plenty more to talk about. The show's going long today.
I got to tell you, Jason,
yeah?
I'm kind of hungry.
Are you hungry?
I'm a little hungry.
Here, have
the
some.
The show's been running so long.
Me too.
Have some roasted kettle kernels, Ron. Why am I handing you food on the show? Well, that's because we are super excited to welcome as a sponsor to the show, NatureBox. And I'm excited because it means research is eating, and I like to eat. It's easy to talk tough about eating right when you're starving at 3 p.m., all cranky, all lightheaded. For me, it was totally at 3 p.m. and I'm trying to put together the show and I'm like, wow, I really do need to eat something. That evil vending machine or our kitchen that's full of junk food can seem like your only friend, but don't give in. Keep your eye on looking, feeling great. Head over to naturebox.com/twit. When you get there, click on the continue button to choose between three subscription options, and then you place your order. It's a subscription service for awesome snacks. Once you're a member, you can select which snacks you'd like in your monthly box. You can select by your dietary needs. If you're vegan, soy-free, gluten-conscious, lactose-free, nut-free, non-GMO, you can determine all of that and select the foods that apply to you. You can select also by taste. If you like savory more than sweet, or you really like spicy food, or you just don't care, you like it all, go there and pick your selection. NatureBox then sends these great tasting snacks right to your door. We have the boxes here at Twit. They're all over the place. And there's, you know, these bags of snacks just hanging out inside the box. It's like you open up the care package and there you go. You're eating some pretty awesome food with free shipping anywhere in the U.S. We're talking healthy, satisfying snacks, barbecue kettle kernels, French toast granola, chili lime pistachios, roasted kettle kernels, like I said, peanut butter nom noms. Even the names just kind of get you going, okay, I really need to eat some of that. They have over 100 of these snacks, so the selection is pretty crazy. All with zero trans fat, zero high fructose corn syrup, and nothing artificial. They're true to their name, Nature Box. It's what it's all about. It's a snack happy gift that keeps on giving. You can give it as a gift. That's actually a great gift idea. Order a 3, 6, or 12-month subscription for that special someone, family, or friend. Swimsuit weather's almost here. So time to snack better. Time to snack smarter and forget the vending machine. Just get in shape with healthy, delicious treats like honey, mesquite, almonds. This is just a couple. Take a look at the site and pick your favorites. Remember, to get 50% off your first box, go to naturebox.com/twit. Stay full, stay strong, go to naturebox.com/twit. And we thank NatureBox for their support of All About Android. It's good to have you guys on the show because now I get to eat a lot.
Maybe. Peanut butter nom noms.
Nom noms, I know, right? It's like that phrase just makes me hungry. And I'm doing a show, so I can't eat right now. But once we're done,
once we're over, once the tape has stopped rolling, he's noshing.
This bag is full right now. At the end, I'm going to be nomming, and it's going to be empty.
Nomming and noshing away.
That's right.
All right. I like how that's just become an accepted word of like our generation. Nom.
Yes. Exactly. I love it. Yes, exactly.
Let's chew on some hardware.
All right, let's do it. Yum. We succeeded. We got a laugh from Brian.
I'm on fire today, let me tell you folks. Speaking fire of fire, roasted. Whoa!
Fire roasted.
Faster segues.
Wow, look at that. That's three in a row. There That's a sort of record. So as we speculated last week, and to no one's surprise, Amazon last week announced at their media Blitz kind of show announcement, They unveiled the Fire TV set-top box, which is $99. And guess what? It's available now. This very happy guy's holding one, and we've got one here right in front of us. So here are the official specs, and this is the breakdown of what the Amazon Fire TV set-top box is, in case you haven't heard yet. It is a quad-core set-top box with 2 GB of RAM, which is very impressive. It's 3 times faster than the latest set-top boxes from Roku and Apple. All the major content providers are on there. Video, music, The remote control has a built-in mic for quick search. It's got gaming features with controls via the Fire TV remote. It's got an upcoming tablet application and an optional $40 gaming controller, which we have right here, by the way. You can see my hairy arm, and then there's the gaming controller, which is basically exactly the leaked image that we saw of the gaming controller. And, of course, for all you Chromecast fans out there, our good buddy Koosh updated the almighty AllCast app to allow casting to Fire TV. So.
Yeah, it didn't take him long.
Yeah.
He's all over it. He's on top of it.
But so we got it.
We got it. And honestly, Leo covered it on Before You Buy today. So check out today's episode of Before You Buy when it posts later. And you can see his full review. I have not had my hands on this thing until just this second.
Really? This is your first time with it?
This is my first time with it. You know, I got to say, just the layout of everything, it's obviously pretty darn straightforward and pretty easy to use.
So now is it running Android?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
the fourth version of Android.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, it looks pretty nice. Here, let's test the voice entry. Maybe I shouldn't do it because my voice is going to break.
All right, how do I do it? Is this just get some sort of reaction? There we go. Thank you. The Good Wife. It's thinking.
No.
Oh, there it is.
Hey.
The first one. I found it.
All right.
Good job. Let's do another one. Let's do The Muppet Movie.
Come on, you can do it.
There it is. Nailed it. two for two.
All right, let's do 3 for 3.
All right.
And then we'll know that it works 100% of the time.
What are we going to search for?
Hi, Patrick.
What should I search for? Give me something else.
Never Ending Story.
Oh, there we go. That's a good one. The Never Ending Story. I said it like a question. There it is.
Oh, man. It Never Ending Story.
Oh, don't get that song in my head, you.
So
quick, put Frozen
on. Amazon.
Frozen.
Oh, great.
I'm going to see your Never Ending Story and raise you with Let It Go.
Do you want to build a snowman?
okay, so there.
What's a more ways to watch?
Oh, wait, I just did the trailer. I want to see a video.
No, it's okay.
Yeah.
Summer in the city of
there you go. That was pretty darn easy.
That was pretty fast.
That looks very seamless.
Yeah, and I mean, it's sharp. Looks great. I gotta say, this is it's a pretty nice device.
Nice device. All right, more ways
I'm
to watch.
I'm pretty impressed. HD, SD for buying. I see. So it surfaces the rental.
It surfaces
okay,
buy.
No buy. Okay.
Yeah. No rental.
Oh, not yet. Yeah, Frozen is early.
So this was supposed to provide content from lots of different providers. It's Amazon.
Well,
right?
No, it does. It does provide for other providers.
Is
I'm not sure.
Apps,
like I said, I haven't. Yes, apps.
Yeah.
Apps.
Oh, like through apps. Okay.
Yeah, there we go.
There we go. Yeah, so.
And then, you know, you've got your Hulu Plus. You've got your music services. Pandora is on there.
So now this gives you what are 2,041 coins?
I don't know, but we've got a lot of them.
I don't know what coins are. Those are Bitcoins.
But boy.
We've got it made, folks.
Let's watch the movies. Yeah. Jeez.
So yeah, so you go. It's like basically like Roku, where you go into Hulu's app now.
Pretty slick, I gotta say. You know, and then the controller—it's a chunky piece of hardware,
but I
guess it's effective. Feels.
Let's see, we're
am
games.
I messing up with you?
Liz just said the voice search only searches the Amazon store. Got it. Not Hulu or Netflix.
Okay, and maybe that's where Android TV comes along and becomes. A powerhouse, right?
The massive because search of everything.
The searching into apps across the entire device and the entire platform. That's incredibly powerful, right there.
Yeah,
but pretty impressive. I mean, it was 3 for 3 on our voice entries, and I've heard in other reviews that the voice entry is actually pretty solid on this thing. So, Ron right now is playing pinball.
To the sorcerer's lair.
And doing an amazing job, might I add. So cool. I mean, the device, it's kind of hard to illustrate just how tiny this device is.
But it's not a dongle.
No, it's not a dongle.
It's a set-top box. It's very small, though.
This thing could be hidden so easily, it wouldn't even matter that it's not a dongle. It's tiny. You know, and you get your Ethernet plug. That's one thing that I would say.
Well, there's an Ethernet plug. That's good.
Yeah, that's one thing with the Chromecast that's kind of a downfall is... It's Wi-Fi only, right? So if you want to get your Ethernet directly into it and stream, super high-res videos to it without a hitch, you're going to have a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Potentially.
I'm impressed. It's a nice little box. Ethernet, that two gig of RAM. Mm-hmm. It's snappy.
Yep.
There's no lag, although you saw some lag on that game, but that was I think it was less about there being lag and me playing it through the monitor.
You just being laggy.
Me just being an old man who can't play video games.
Mm-hmm. So $99. Amazon's device for, the living room. What do you guys think? Kevin, are you going to rush out and get one?
No, and I think I actually had this conversation with the guys at work earlier today. I tried to come up with what we really thought about it, and I think, I don't know, I guess we know who this device is for, and this device is for people who are buying Kindles, right? This is, if you're invested in one ecosystem or the other, if you're into iOS or if you're into Android, this is not the device for you. You're probably going to choose a Chromecast or you're going to choose an Apple TV, hands down.
Agreed. I mean, this is what I always say, is that this is made for people who are tried and true Amazon branded, at $99, this is so easy to buy someone for their birthday, for Christmas. And if they already have a Kindle or Kindle Fire, they're already Amazon Prime. It's just, it's good.
The fact that it doesn't have the play access, access to play movies, because I actually have a growing video library on Play Movies now, and I would miss out on that with this device. If I didn't have that, I might be more inclined to do it. I feel like it's a little different than the Kindle Fire. The Kindle Fire, being a tablet, you want access to all of those tablet apps that you can get through the Play Store, just regular apps. When it's a set-top box, it's a little bit different for me. I don't know why there's a distinction there, but there is.
Yeah, I mean, what I think is interesting is that I do stuff on Google Play and the Google Play Store, but I actually do, I'm Amazon Prime, and I do watch a lot of stuff via Amazon through the clunky Google, the HTML5 video player through the browser on Google TV.
Right.
And some stuff that I do watch, like here, I'm gonna search for something. Made of Stone. This is the Stone Roses documentary, which, as far as I know, isn't on Netflix or whatever. The fact that it's on here and just loads right up, I mean, that's watch now on Amazon Prime. Boom, done.
Boom. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty cool.
Gina, what about you? You sold?
I'm intrigued, but I'm sort of split across both ecosystems. I've got some stuff in Amazon. I mean, I've got Amazon Prime now, especially I'm signed up for Amazon Mom, mostly for my daughter. But I've also got, the Play Store. I really like my Chromecast. I don't want to plug that many more things into my TV.
Totally.
I'm probably going to stick to the Chromecast for now, but I see the appeal here. And I agree. I think it's for Prime members who have a Kindle, who have a library of stuff that they bought.
Yeah.
Do you even have free HDMI ports on your TV? I'm completely out. And I only have two, so there's really
I have one. Man, I need to upgrade my TV.
After I plugged in my Chromecast, I think I'm down to one now, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do with that one, man? You got to fill it.
I know.
Fill it with something.
Jeez, yeah.
Okay, so that's the Fire TV, awesome new hardware. It just so happens, and this was totally a last-minute deal, that we actually also have the Samsung Galaxy S5 in a box.
In a box.
Right here.
So wait, it's actually inside the box.
Inside the box.
Is the box made of wood?
It looks like it's made of wood. It's actually paper. Yeah. They went for the faux look.
The faux box.
The faux wood.
Yeah.
So it's in here, and, Leo did a review of this on Before You Buy, so if you have not seen Before You Buy. Again, this is yet another awesome device to check out Before You Buy. Oh, you want the box. You don't even want the phone.
Sorry, the box is more fun.
It's the Galaxy S5, and here it is. And I honestly have not taken a look at it before now. And, man, that dimply back.
It is dimply.
I'm just not a fan of it.
Oh, it's hard to see on the
I know. It's so hard here. Is there a close-up? Let's see. It's so contrasty because it's super white.
There it is. There it is.
Okay.
Yeah. If you
see my hand shadow.
Yeah.
Dimply.
Yes.
There it is. There.
Pretty darn dimply. Yes. And
see the dimples?
I don't know.
They're in dimples like a golf ball, right?
Yeah. Dimples, not out dimples.
Right. Yes. It's not a Braille phone. It's a
going back to our accessibility thing.
Yeah. Totally. But yeah. So the Galaxy S5 has this kind of beveled quality on the side here, which, again, man, I just realized I always talk smack about Samsung, and I don't mean to, but I'm not a huge fan of their design aesthetic. Their design approach from a hardware standpoint, I feel like the kind of curved outlines, on this side don't give it a premium feel. It just kind of makes it feel cheaper to me, but I guess that's just me. But I don't know. It feels a lot the same. Here you go, Ron.
Yeah, it doesn't feel dramatically different. Yeah, you talk. Please say
something.
My
voice is going.
It doesn't feel dramatically different from the four. I mean, we knew that. Mm. And there's a great picture of Leo.
Oh. Oh, there we go.
You know.
Oh, for the dimple.
Yeah, the dimpling, the dimple effect.
That's good.
But I hate that rail around the side.
I know it bugs me.
Not just you. I hate it. I'm trying to be open to it, but oh.
Yeah, no, it's not cool.
It doesn't look that great. Yeah,
it's light. This is a very light phone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
screen looks nice.
It's lighter than my Nexus 5. You know, and a quick rundown on the specs on it. You know, so it's about 5.1 inches, so it's pretty big. 1080 by 1920 resolution. Got a 432 PPI on the pixel density. You know, it weighs about 5.1 ounces, so it's pretty light. Running Android 4.42. What are the other fun, interesting stuff? Camera is a 16 megapixel camera with an LED flash. The front facing camera is 2.1 megapixels. And it's running the Qualcomm Snapdragon 801. It's got a quad core. With 16 gig of built-in storage, you know, which we all know is the majority of it is bloatware from Samsung.
Well, yeah, I think what Leo went into this device to see how much, you know, was left over, and I think it was like 10 gigs.
Yeah, they say here in the specs that there's 16 gig of memory, 10.7 gig of maximum user storage,
yeah,
which is just so they're using 6 gigs for TouchWiz and all that fun stuff. So
look at that settings screen is so fascinating.
Yeah, they definitely changed it.
Even from the S4, that's a dramatic redesign of what they had.
There we go. Hey, thank you, Burke. That's a good shot.
That's a great shot.
No, it's a very different settings screen. Looks way different. I think we had seen. See, going with the circular
icons and avatars, man. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, obviously, we haven't had a whole lot of time to play with this. We literally just pulled it out of the box, but
literally, we did. You just saw it.
But this is the S5, and I don't know. I mean, it's everything that I've read and heard about it is that it's, you know, it's a nice incremental upgrade. Is it a reason to drop your S4 if you happen to have one of those and get it? No, but I'm not sure it necessarily needs to be Samsung. You know. If you're a big fan of Samsung and you don't need to upgrade right now, 1 year later, you'll probably be around next year for the S6. But I just, yeah, it looks okay.
I mean, we talked about the Amazon Fire being for loyal Amazon users.
Yeah, this is
I know people who swear by Samsung and swear by the Galaxy phones. And, mm-hmm. and, you know, there are folks who have, you know, have been using the S3 or the S4 who are just like, oh, this is the next one. And so like for, you know, so here's a S4 that Burke nearly killed himself to hand us. You know, so you kind of get a little comparison here. Do you want to hold
the
one?
Size comparison for sure.
So you can see how much bigger this one actually is than the S4. It's pretty dramatic when you see it.
Yeah.
Which is funny because when I first look at the S5, I'm like, oh, it doesn't look any different than the S4, but it actually really does. Mm-hmm. Of course, this is a black model versus a white model, but still, you know, it's a bigger screen. It's a bigger device. You know, if Samsung loyalists will upgrade and probably like it and be fine with it. For me, I'm not really a Samsung guy. So there you go. See the smooth background versus the dimples.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
all right.
There actually is one defining feature about the S5 that sort of I feel like was overlooked in the Galaxy Tab when the new Galaxy Tabs came out, and that is that you'll notice that the S5 no longer has a menu button.
The menu
button is gone,
mm-hmm.
and it is replaced with the Recents button. And that's something Samsung has been hanging on to that menu button forever. And that's been the bane of developer existence right now because they have such a predominantly popular phone and they're using such a legacy implementation of the system.
Yeah.
I'm happy to see that the S5 finally got rid of this menu button.
Absolutely. What's also interesting is that, you know, we were talking about the Gina with your new phone with the new HTC One M8. You know, we have a physical home button here, and you can't really see it because of the studio lighting, but a very subtle light-up menu button, apps button, and then back button is at the bottom of the – yeah, do you see it? Yeah,
oh,
there it goes. Yeah,
it
see
is.
That?
So there's the multitasking in lieu of an app or a menu button.
Mm-hmm. And then there's back as well, right? So those are physical buttons, and also it's haptic. So when you touch either of those, the phone kind of shimmies. Yeah, you know, so you can't see, that on the screen. I apologize, but I assure you the phone is vibrating a little every time I touch it.
In the reverse order as well from the Google experience.
Yep. So
they've been pushing that reversed order since the beginning.
Now, are they doing that because it's a better UI or just to be different? You know, like, or just to be like, hey, we're Samsung and we're different. Like, why do that?
I can only imagine it's like the Instagram thing I talked about before. This was before these on-screen navigation buttons even existed.
Sure.
Samsung had the buttons in this order. And so it just happened to be that that's what they stuck with, and that's sort of their brand, those buttons on the right. Mm-hmm. If S4 owners suddenly upgraded to the S5 and the buttons were reversed, there would be an outcry from people of what the heck happened to my buttons.
Yeah. What happened to my buttons? I want my buttons.
So there you go, the Galaxy S5. Admittedly, not necessarily a deep dive, but a preview. And if you want a more kind of more deep of a dive, I suppose, check out Leo Laporte's review on Before You Buy. That's today's episode of Before You Buy. Check it out. All right, so let's take a quick break and thank another sponsor for today's episode. That would be Lynda.com. Love Lynda. They're just a fantastic site for learning. That's what it's all about. Lynda.com helps anyone learn creative software and business skills to achieve your personal, professional goals. With Lynda.com subscription, members receive unlimited access to thousands of high-quality and engaging video tutorials across a wide variety of subjects, everything from creative software skills, business negotiation, app development. At Lynda.com, you'll learn how to code, create, and build Android applications in Java, from the foundations of object-oriented Java programming to using the Android API to create engaging mobile apps. Learn to develop apps for today's popular desktop and mobile platforms. Build web apps with .NET, PHP, MySQL. You can improve your language skills with JavaScript, Ruby, C, C++, R, and so much more. Actually, Lynda.com author David Gassner has been building, very busy actually, building new training for Android developers recently with three new titles. Learn all about Android Studio, the exciting new IDE for Android development. There's Learn the Ins and Outs of Android App Development. And be sure to watch Distributing Android Apps to Monetize Your Hard Work by Publishing Your App for Sale on Google Play and other popular Android app distribution platforms. Very valuable stuff for budding developers out there wanting to know a little bit more about the process. As for me, I'm not a developer. I'm way into music production, and Larry Crane, who's the recording and mixing engineer at Portland's Jackpot Studios, also the editor of an amazing magazine called Tape Op that he founded years ago. It's actually free. You should check that out. Has a fantastic series on capturing creativity in the studio, mixing, recording, and it's just fascinating. I love seeing the pros work in their environment. That's exactly what Lynda is all about. Over 2,400 courses with more added every week. All Lynda.com courses are produced at the highest quality. It's not some homemade video on YouTube. This is professional quality video, really well orchestrated, planned out, plotted for you, and it all makes sense. Has a great flow to it. It's just great content. The instructors, like Larry Crane here, are accomplished professionals at the top of their field and passionate about teaching that information to you. And the courses are for all experience levels, beginner, intermediate, advanced. You can watch from your computer, tablet, or mobile device and pick up, you know, where you left off on other devices. You can go from one device to the other and pick up. It's really great that way. Whether you have 15 hours or 15 minutes, they're structured so you can learn start to finish quickly or in chunks. It's really up to you. Search the transcripts, find quick answers, or just read along with a video. They also offer, Lynda.com also offers certificates for completion when you finish a course, which you can publish to your LinkedIn profile, which is great. Obviously, if you're a professional in the field, it's good to let others know that you know that information, where you got it from. It's only $25 a month for access to the entire Lynda.com course library. For $37.50 a month, you can subscribe to the premium plan, which includes exercise files that let you follow along with the instructors using the same files, the same project assets that they do. It's valuable stuff. And you can try Lynda.com right now with a free 7-day trial. Visit Lynda.com/allaboutandroid to access the entire library. That's over 2,400 courses free for 7 days. That's Lynda.com/allaboutandroid. Thank you, Linda. Okay, this is going to be a short app section just because we've gone a little long, but that's okay. There's really one big thing to talk about, so let's get into apps.
Yeah, really just one app story tonight, which is Cover, an app that we covered in the Android Arena just a few episodes ago.
Oh, a while back.
Got acquired by Twitter. A Cover is a contextual launcher that shows you the apps that you need depending on what time of day it is and what you're doing. And Cover says for now that the app will be available in the Play Store while the team focuses their attention on our work at Twitter, they say. If that changes down the road, they'll provide another update here. So I don't know. Reading between the lines, it sounds like Cover is not going to be getting a lot of updates soon, but kind of interesting acquisition for Twitter. It'd be interesting to see how this team puts that kind of effort or what they've learned from Cover into Twitter. You can kind of imagine what that might be like if it's straight one to one. You know, if this is about surfacing contextual tweets in certain ways. But congratulations, the Cover team. And I don't know. After a year, not too bad.
Man,
getting acquired by Twitter.
Well, so they've been doing this for 2 years, but they released a year ago.
They didn't even release a year ago.
I think they released in October. Talk about a quick turnaround on that. That's just impressive. And congrats to the team. Yeah, I'm scratching my head on this one. I'm thinking, okay, is it Twitter wanting to do some sort of like home replacement that integrates entirely around Twitter? Is it
like
Twitter?
A Facebook Home.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Like Facebook Home, something like that. Is it Twitter wanting the talent to make their Twitter app better? Because, you know, commonly people, whether it's right or not at this point, people bash on the Twitter app saying, you know, it's just not as good as the other ones. What do you think?
I think it's probably a little bit of, it's probably more of the latter and less of the former, but probably a little bit of both. I think in any sort of these, especially with these kind of app acquisitions and these small teams, it's, you know, what they call the acqui-hire, you know, where they're getting the talent and bringing them on board. But I think what Cover has done in terms of their interface and their approach to their lock screen application, I'm sure Twitter would take advantage of. I don't know, Kevin, what do you think of Cover?
Yeah, I think that especially when you read sort of that press release there, it didn't sound like a whole lot of acqui-hire to me.
That's
me personally. It was like the Cover will be on the App Store. Maybe we'll update it. But there was nothing about, you know, we're excited to see what Cover can bring to the Twitter application, or we're excited to see like what the future may hold, I guess. It felt very acqui-hire-ish. To me.
If anything changes, you know, down the line, we'll let you know. But for now, it's still in the Play Store and you can still get it.
But I'm sure, I mean, but with the acquisition, not only are they getting the talent, but they're getting the code base and they're getting all the stuff that they've done with Cover. And, you know, how often have we criticized Twitter's Android presence and the Android application? You know, I wouldn't be surprised if you start seeing some of that stuff get integrated into it and you start seeing, the Android app kind of grow from there.
I would love to see more Android applications taking an out-of-app experience or building in more out-of-app features like Cover. Like if Twitter built in a lock screen just into the Twitter application, if I didn't have to use it, as long as it was just an option, I think that would be great. Too much time do I spend just sort of digging through my applications. I would rather companies start focus on bubbling that content to me without having to open it first.
Yeah. Although, you know, once you start loading too much stuff into a app that people are used to being somewhat, well, quote, bare bones, I guess.
Yeah.
Then suddenly the app gets bigger and then people complain about the app. Why is it so darn large? It's, you know, occupying all this space. So what did you think from a design standpoint, Kevin? What Cover was doing was very interesting and original. How did that design strike you when they first came out?
I found it really fascinating, and I think that they're doing something that a lot of people are trying to take risks on, and I think that they implemented it really well. And actually, I turned on Cover. I applied for the beta. I never actually got in, but for some reason, I wasn't warned that it came out. So I installed the beta a few days ago, actually, and I started using it as my lock screen. The thing that comes initially to me is that I have a PIN code on my phone. And lock screen applications just don't work really well if you try to protect your phone. But beyond that, if you look at they put in some really nice animations, especially when you switch between between home or you switch between work. I think that they put in some really great animations to indicate a context switch. And beyond that, one thing I didn't like is that they overrode the natural behavior of swiping down from the status bar where your clock normally is. And that's how I was interacting with my phone quite a lot that way, to get to the settings, to turn off my Wi-Fi, and to override that behavior. It was very jarring for me. Not to say that it was a bad design choice, but right. These are the types of things that you have to keep in mind when you're changing default phone behavior.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Not right there.
You don't want to mess with what people already are used to and want to, you know.
But at the same time, like what Kevin's saying, take risks and
yeah.
I suppose see how it goes.
The point about out of app experiences, though, is such a good one. My HTC One died because my daughter threw it too many times, and then I ordered the M8, and so I had a week and a half without a phone. So I started using my iPhone 4S, which is my dev phone, and so I use iOS full time for the past whatever week and a half. And the insight that I had about iOS versus Android is how much I live outside of apps. I live in the notification shade. I live in widgets. I flip over to now, whereas iOS is a very app focused operating system, and I hated it because I like used that those sort of ambient spaces like the shade and the widgets and the home screens in a lot. I just kind of live in those spaces actually more. I live on the edges of Android more than I live inside the apps, just as I'm through my day, you know, checking on things or whatever. And so I really love to see innovation in those spaces than in app specifically.
Definitely. Absolutely. All right. Well, cool stuff there. Congratulations, cover team. Man. I'd love to create something, and then 7 months later,
yeah, just like, hey, we're joining Twitter. I like how they make it like we're joining Twitter. Like, you know, they invited us. We went over. Okay.
We had
sure.
drinks.
Yeah.
We shot some pool.
Yeah,
and
somebody in the chat room, I forgot who it was, but they corrected me. And acquihire is a term, but they said it's an acquisition.
Acquisition.
Oh, these dumb words.
I like that dumb right. word. That might be the title.
Acquisition. So there it goes. All right. Well, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, 99 Designs, for sponsoring this episode of All About Android. We love 99 Designs. You know why? Because 99 Designs makes it easy to get the design you love. The online platform connects creative entrepreneurs like you with a community of over 280,000 graphic designers. Whether you're looking for a new logo, a responsive website, stationery, or a t-shirt, there's a designer at 99 Designs that can bring your idea to life. What if you could start your next design project today and have dozens of designers to choose from in just a few days? Well, guess what? With 99 Designs, you can. Selection, speed, and creativity are just a few of the benefits of having several designers work on your design project instead of just one. When you launch a design contest, you'll get plenty of creative ideas, give the designers feedback, and end up with the perfect design within a week. The process is fun, fast, and 100% satisfaction guaranteed. You can start your next graphic design project for as low as $199. Visit 99designs.com/AAA and get a $99 power pack of services for free. A power pack gives you more designer time and attention. 99 Designs will bold, highlight, and feature your design project in 99 Designs' marketplace, and you'll get nearly twice as many designs. It's just that powerful. So visit 99designs.com/AAA, and we thank them for their support. And I continue to want a project to use 99 Designs for. I just don't have it yet.
I know,
but
right?
When I need a logo, the first place I'm going is 99 Designs. So hopefully soon, crossing my fingers this year, I'll come up with an idea.
Well, and we've talked a lot in the past about, you know, design an app. You know, get some sort of a visual design around an app.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, so, and having talented designers. You know what's funny? I just was at work the other day, and I pulled up Photoshop. And I had to pull a logo out of a piece of art. And I realized, I'm like, wow, I'm not good at this. And I have such respect for people who are. And those are the people over at 99 Design. So hopefully they'll help you and help me too.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Right on. Okay. It's that time. Let's battle in the arena.
So many enter, but only one lives. Android Arena.
Well, there's no denying that, Ron, I think you kind of ran away with this
every now and then. Every now and then, you step to the plate and you just... Baseball just started, and I just hit my first home run of the season. Wow!
I knew you were going to win, but wow. 80% of the vote with Newsbeat.
I knew I had a good app with Newsbeat. I didn't know it was this good. I just want to thank the chat room, and I want to thank India, and yeah, I want to thank all the downloaders, all the folks who download the show and watch it a week later. I want to thank the audio listeners.
There we go. I want to thank all those, the canned applause.
I want to thank Brian. I couldn't do it without Brian.
I feel like Time Hop deserved to do a little bit more, only because the last week, I've grown to really love that app.
Oh.
And one thing I will say just as a quick tip, because I didn't say this last week, is that they can only go back as far as I think like a year into your Twitter history.
Okay.
So in order to get your full Twitter archive, you have to actually go to the Twitter site, download the zip, and upload it to them.
Do your explore,
suddenly like it's so awesome. Like I get everything, and every day it's like rediscovery of all this stuff that I've done the past 8 years.
I don't know if I want to be reminded of that.
No, sometimes you're like, oh wow, what was I thinking about? Other times you're like, I forgot about that. That was good.
There were some inebriated tweets that I would prefer to forget. Let's just leave it at that.
Try it to see because you might actually like those inebriated tweets.
Yeah.
And by the way, thank you to Liz for bringing me hot tea. Liz, I think it'll help my voice.
Above and beyond. That was wonderful.
Okay. Hoping that it'll improve. We have some apps to go over this week. And I guess because I was the loser, I'm going to go first. Mine is really not that complicated, but I think it's pretty awesome. So let's see here. It's called Facets. It's a 99-cent app. And it's a standalone app, but it really comes alive when you integrate it with Musée, which is the live desktop slight kind of image replacement, essentially, for your desktop that we've featured on a previous episode. But it can stand alone. And I can show it off right here. Essentially, last year, an Australian artist named Justin Mahler had a 365-day challenge of creating one high-quality wallpaper every day. Facets is kind of all of those pieces of art that he created, the entire catalog of them. And I think techies will kind of like the art that he does. His approach is just very unique and kind of cool and not really cheesy. And I don't know, it's just kind of interesting design, right? And he, you know, spent an entire year creating one of these every day. And Matt W. in the chat said, I stopped using Musée. I did too, because I kind of wasn't a super big fan of some of the images that they were putting up. I was like, this is a really great design app, but I'm not necessarily a huge fan of the images that they're bringing in. Well, this app, Facets, has integration with Musée. So if you have Musée installed, you can select it, and bam, you get all of his apps. Justin Mahler's apps brought into your desktop automatically with the same kind of functionality of Musée. So I think it's a very unique selection of desktops. So, you know, like me, I have a hard time picking. I always want something new so that I don't get bored of looking at my home screen. But I hate searching them out and finding high quality, high res images all over the place and ones that I'm going to be fine with. This just kind of rotates through a bunch of really great ones, 365 of them, all created in a pretty cool kind of project that Justin Mahler had when he did this every day for a year. So it is called Facets. It's 99 cents to get access to all of his original art, and it brings it in, and I don't know. I like it. I like his approach to digital art history.
Pretty cool.
And back to the meaningful designs. Like this is a great application of something that did meaningful design. You can see when you open the application that the titles for each list item, they scroll up just a little bit from the bottom. It's not too extreme, but there's a subtle scroll up, a subtle animation that's running, and I think that adds quite a lot to the interface, to the experience. That one right there. Yeah. It looks so great, and it just adds something. It makes it feel more alive, and it makes it feel like there's a lot of thought put into every single screen here.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Concepts. You can drill it down to concepts and to mood, and I don't know. It's just cool art. So there you go. That is Facets, 99 cents. Check it out. Okay, Gina, you are up next, and I have your app installed on my Nexus 7, so I'll show it off.
Cool. Yeah, my app is called Scene, S-C-E-N-E. It's called A New Way to Do Photos. The tagline is kind of part of the title there in Google Play. And it's free. And it's just pretty straightforward, very simple photos organizer. If you've got a ton of photos on your device, you install Scene. And like I said, totally straightforward, but a really nice interface, particularly for browsing through. You don't have a whole lot of photos there, Jason.
Realized, yes, I installed it on the wrong device. I'll see if I can get it on my phone here real quick.
Who's that handsome fellow?
I know, I took that like 2 minutes ago. Sorry about that, Gina.
No, that's okay. That's okay. It's funny. My device is pretty new too, so I don't have a whole lot of photos on my new M8. But if you have a ton of photos, it creates this really nice interface that's calendar-based, which I think is nicer and easier to scroll through by date than the default, you know, the Google's Photos app. You can create albums. You can mark images as favorites. So I know I'm always, you know, wanting to show people, you know, my pictures of my kid, my favorite ones. You can go straight to your favorites. It's really easy to create albums. And you don't have to create a Scene account, and you don't have to upload your photos to their servers. This is all local if you want it to. If you don't want to share photos through Facebook or Google Plus, you can use Scene, and you can share through regular methods, email or any other app on your Android device, or you can create an album and add a password to it and upload your photos to Scene and send those to friends if you want a sort of alternate way. There you go.
There's
a device with lots of photos on there. Yeah. So, see? Babies.
Banana,
I love it.
Eating a banana.
That's incredible. So you got that quick scroll tab on the top right there. When you're in the view where you're there you go.
That'll get
you through dates really nice.
That's
you
good.
Can tap on any date in order to go to a calendar view, which is really nice. So I think you go to the 28th and it's got that pretty calendar view, which I always like. Flickr does a calendar view like that as well. And you can tab through your month. So it's really just like if you've got a device for a long time, you take a lot of pictures, really nice way to organize them. And see, it's got all these cool animations, just a really kind of smooth, nice experience for dealing with tons of photos. If you go into the grid view with all the photos, the hamburger menu will show you albums. So if you tap on albums, you can easily create a new album, drag and drop photos into that album. So it, you know, defaults to date, which makes a lot of sense. And then I think if you tap on an album, or if you go to photo, sorry.
Photos. There we go. Add photos.
Yeah, add photos, and then you could just you could select. And throw them in there. So, like I said, just really simple photo organizer. I think it's a nicer interface than the default Photos app. And if you just want to throw all your photos into a date-based interface to say, oh, show me all the photos from last March, that's really, I think Scene is a really nice way to do it.
This is really nice. What is the notifications area for? Do you know that? Like it has a little bell, notification bell. I'm wondering.
I think it's if you share it with friends.
You give notifications.
Yeah, you get notifications.
Thanks, Ron.
Hey,
thanks.
Yeah, that's why I'm here.
Appreciate that.
Hey, let's kick Jason while he's not feeling well.
Yeah, it looks like that.
Oh, friends. I bet you it has something to do with friends, probably, so you can add friends.
Yeah. So if a friend notifies you. So I'm probably not going to create a whole new social network inside Scene,
right.
But if I do want to share a couple of photos with you know, people in the family who aren't on Facebook, for example, this is one way to do it.
I'd like to note that I could have made a joke about Jason not having friends in the app, but I held back. Just saying.
But that's not a joke. That's reality, Ron. If your joke was that I have no friends in the app, that's reality. I have no friends. Except you guys. I love you guys.
Truth.
That's awesome. That's a great looking gallery replacement. And I can't say that I love the stock gallery. I mean, keep hoping that they kind of beef it up a little bit.
Yeah, gallery is particularly decrepit. Photos is better.
I guess photos is
photos
better.
Is better, but I don't love it. I don't love it.
Yeah, I don't love it either. So Scene might be a good alternative.
There you go. That is Scene, a new way to do photos. There we go. All right. Kevin, yours is up next. I was playing around with this earlier, and I had a lot of fun with it.
All right. That's what I like to hear. It's a great intro.
Yep.
So I chose for this week, it's an app that is sort of dear to my heart, especially with what we do here at Tumblr, and it's called Fixie GIF, if you will. We're just going to call it GIFs from here on out.
Sure.
So Fixie GIF is a GIF camera that we have on Android to create actual GIFs. And this is really awesome because we don't have a lot of options for GIF cameras on Android. If you look over to our iOS brethren, you can create GIFs all day long. And you have a number of options to do so. On Android, not so much. And as Gina might know, that working with the camera on Android is especially painful. And to try to get this to work on a bunch of devices is really not very fun. So I think that they've done a wonderful job here with their GIF camera. And you can add all sorts of effects. You can add sunglasses onto it. I think the sunglasses one is my favorite effect. I have probably 1,000 photos of me in different poses wearing these glasses.
a 1,000 pictures of you dealing with it.
Exactly. So deal with it. So I think this is really great. It's a really great application on the ecosystem, and I think it's one of the essentials that I recommend to all my friends they have on their phone. There's nothing more fun than just having a bunch of GIFs from your party going out last night or meeting with friends or to have these family memories. So get Fixy GIF. I think it's great, and I really like the guys who work on it.
Can't say this is the best GIF or GIF or whatever you want to say ever on.
Or is it?
But it's all he gave me.
That's me. This is called me not getting it. I don't get it. I don't get it.
But yeah, what don't you get about that?
Here. I thought GIFs were gonna go away. I thought we had we had moved beyond them. But you folks at Tumblr, man, you guys really gave it a new life.
There we go.
There it is.
How's that?
Yeah, that's much better.
Feeling it. Yeah. It is no small accomplishment to get GIFs working on any platform.
Yeah, tell me about it.
I mean, you would think that for a image format that's, 20 years old or whatever it is, that we would have really good libraries for dealing with this. I mean, we still have to build our GIF processing from scratch.
Because they gave up on it, right? Is it still being maintained?
Yeah, actually. Yeah. We're doing some good maintenance on it. The thing is GIFs are really great for artists. You can do things in GIFs that you just can't really do with video.
Yeah.
It's becoming, there's a resurgence because of using it as an art form. Obviously, this camera is not a fine art usage of the GIF. But
I don't know. This is
looking good. Yeah. According to the Wikipedia, it was first introduced by CompuServe in 1987. So there you go. So it's nearly 30 years old, which makes me want to kill myself.
Don't do that. We need you next week. We don't have
to. I know.
Just deal with it, Ron.
Just deal with it.
Deal with it.
Exactly.
Deal with it. Deal with it. Deal with it. Deal with it. Okay, there we go. I love it. Fixy GIF camera. It's a lot of fun. And that is free as well.
Did you know that the controversy over the licensing agreement for the patent holder between Unisys and CompuServe in 1994 spurred the development of the Portable Networks Graphics Standard, PNG?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. There you go. The more you know.
All right.
There's animated PNGs, but nobody really uses them.
And PNGs would be so much because it's a better standard. All right, we're gonna get nerdy, but you get more. All right, sorry. Don't get me started.
Oh no.
Okay.
All right, Ron, go.
So typically, when I try to do the arena here, I try to look for I think you see some themes with me. You see a lot of keyboards. You see a lot of. I was into a launcher phase for a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm into productivity apps, but every now and then I do like to play games. But I try to steer away from the obvious, this is an obvious brand or whatever. But I gotta admit, I downloaded Star Wars Assault Team and I kind of love it. So basically what it is it's ostensibly like a card game, like Magic the Gathering or something like that, but on your Android. But you get to be the characters from Star Wars, and it's a lot of fun when you're sitting on BART for a half an hour. So basically, there are all these different cards for the different characters, and there's the characters you recognize from the show.
Oh, it's like Pokemon.
From the movie. Yeah, it's kind of Pokemon, yeah, or Magic the Gathering, whatever. And you basically, you line up against villains, and you fight, and you each take turns. It's turn-based. And each character has different kind of controls and different kind of things that they can do. And it's a lot of fun. So I have it. I installed it here on my tablet so you can see it other than I have yet to meet Vader. So I'm much further on my phone, by the way. So I just installed this for the first time on the tablet right now. On my phone, I've got Han to a tier 2 level 10. So it's pretty good. But
that answers question one about Play Services integration.
Yeah. No, right. Well, yeah, right. Which is a good question. Go. Actually, it should because I did log in. Oh, wow. I didn't even think about that. Very interesting, Kevin. Let's find out.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Because I do get the play services when I log in my phone. It says it has my it shows my mom.
Oh, but it didn't. Oh, yeah.
There it goes. Google Play Games.
But it doesn't pick up your progress location.
Well, we're going to find out in a moment.
Fingers crossed.
This is a live demo. See, welcome, Ron Richards. There I am. I'm going to say yes. I want lots of data. Give me my data.
Come on. You can do this.
There you go. All right. So there you go. There's your little launch screen. And we get
your obligatory long time
ago. We've all seen the movie, right? We all know this. We can skip this, right? We can skip it. But the graphics
are
great.
Any Star Wars game that ever doesn't start with that
needs to.
All right. All right.
Bravo. Thank you, 3PO. Okay.
Here's how you play this game.
So you get your first hero. And there you go. And each character, they've got the number of damage they do, a number of hit points, and their little thing. You can see what level they are. So I'm going to hit okay. It's probably going to want
to... So it is picking up from where you left off, right?
I don't know. Let's find out.
Edit team.
Okay, hit edit team.
Uh-huh.
Oh, wait, no. It really doesn't want me to. He really wants me to tap the mission button. See? No, tap the mission button, please. Yeah, so it looks like it didn't really pick that up. Yeah. But anyway, so regardless, for the sake of the demo, we'll go through the tutorial here. But anyway, so when you go in the game, basically there are a bunch of different missions. There are also some training missions, and there are also some like bonus missions to get you more kind of equipment or ways to level up your heroes. But basically, you go through, you get about maybe 4 or 5 skirmishes per mission. Every character and alien that you could expect from the Star Wars stuff, they did a really good job here. So in this particular case, I've only got Han, so... We tap that and that
left with only a Han.
Only a Han. So there you go, and it opens up the and it's just for me, this is just a fun game to pass the time. This tutorial is really a nightmare though. So
well
I wanna get to the shooting. Okay, I got a gun.
I wanna see the shooting.
There we go. We're gonna do this. Okay, thank you.
Trot in the chat room says pro tip. Shoot first.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so here it goes. This is Han Solo's ready to attack. So all I got to do is I just tap who I want to shoot, and I shoot him, and I took some hit points away.
Uh-huh.
Now he's going to take his turn. He took some hit points away. I'm going to do it again.
There's no, virtual dice that...
No, it's this hit or miss that happens and things like that. See, it says you and your enemies take turns. Yada, yada.
This is a great tutorial.
I know. It's a very in-depth tutorial. For the sake of time, I'm going to switch to my phone.
Yeah, maybe.
So you might want to kill the audio for a second, Brian. On my phone, I've made it much further.
Than the tutorial.
Yeah, exactly. Good. So we're going to turn that off. All right. Okay. So on the phone... Now, this does not use Holo or any Google design guidelines whatsoever. I don't know if you noticed that.
Games are kind of exempt from that kind of stuff, right?
Some of them are.
Yeah, games are exempt.
So in this one, I've got a pretty good team. I've already unlocked Han. I've unlocked Luke. Cow. I've unlocked Chewie. I've got Leia. I've got R2. And so you amass these different heroes. So I could be like, okay, so for this next mission, I don't need this little Androsian dude. But instead, I need R2. So I'm going to pull R2 up there. And you go back. And then as you progress in the game, like we went to Kashyyyk, and then I was over on Ord Mantell, and there are other ones, Tatooine I haven't unlocked yet, so there's a bunch of different levels. It keeps you busy. There are these special missions where you can do training missions or promotion missions. Every day they kind of have wacky, like today's Weapon Wednesday. So if I do a promotion one, I'll do it a little hard. I'll do Tier 3 where it's a little difficult. Now there's some the pros to this game is that the graphics are really great. It's got all the sound effects. It's a lot of fun. The cons is that it requires to be have network connection.
Yeah, it looks like it.
So it's very intensive in that regard. So we use Han's special lucky shot, and so we gonna tap that, and I'm gonna choose who I want to shoot. I'm gonna shoot that guy, and that takes him out in one shot. Luke's got the lightsaber, so he can go like that. He slices people, pretty cool. So it's very network intensive. What's interesting is that when all your guys run out of hit points and they die, you have two options where you can say you're dead, you blew it, or you can revive your guys, and that uses the in-game currency of these holo crystals, which are wildly expensive. I do not advise you to do the in-app purchases on this game. I can't get out of it because I'm playing it. But no joke, 16 of these crystals cost $4.99. And in order, if I died right now, in order to revive, it would cost me 4 crystals. So every 4 times you die, you got to pay 5 more bucks in order to revive your team that much quicker. Yeah, they're ridiculously expensive. So I would advise you to avoid that. That's just me.
Thank you, Brian.
A little bit of warning.
Do you get crystals just from progressing through the game?
Yeah, you do earn the crystals. You can get them through just regular gameplay. And what's also interesting is that there are crystals and there's also energy. And you need like 6 energy units in order to play a mission. And there's a timer on the energy, and your energy refills every 20 minutes or something like that. So I'm sure the game developer saw that as a way to people to pay to buy energy in order to keep playing missions. I saw that as the suggestion it's time to stop playing. Because if you just wait a half an hour, then your energy reloads and all that sort of stuff. So anyway, Star Wars Assault Team, it's free in the Google Play Store. Watch out for the in-app purchases. I would avoid that if you can. They're kind of prohibitively expensive. But if you like Star Wars like me, and if you're a big nerd, if you listen to Star Wars Minute on your commute to work, this is great to play while you're doing it as well, too. So, yeah, Star Wars Assault Team, a game that I'm actually playing, which is rare. So.
And Monkey Stick points out a really good tip in the chat room, avoid dying.
Avoid Check. Dying, yes. Those are good tips as well. Yeah,
all right,
yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah, see, so Chewie's dead, R2's dead.
Oh, see? Yeah.
You see, Luke's got a really cool thing where he makes everybody want to attack him, and then he deflects any blaster shots with his lightsaber, and it bounces it back to them. So, yeah, it's pretty cool. So, yeah, see, so I killed all the guys, so I get a little reward.
Thank you, Brian, with the transitions. I'm loving them.
No problem.
That is Star Wars Assault Team. It's free with a lot of in-app purchases that you could just ignore.
Be careful.
Okay.
Just be careful.
Beware.
I just want to warn everybody.
So we have 4 apps this week to vote on. Facets, Scene, Fixie, GIF Camera, and Star Wars Assault Team. You can vote for your favorite app this week by going to AAApoll.com/156, AAApoll.com/156. Early reports are in. Fixie GIF coming out ahead. Scene, a close second. Facets at third. And Star Wars Assault Team, not voted on yet. But we'll see.
That was the diplomatic way of referring to it. There you go.
The GIF will never die.
I think the Fixie camera is going to be the one that's going to do it. There.
Awesome stuff. Well, this has been a fantastic episode. And, man, it's been full of a lot of just interesting discussion and just crazy stories. But and, Kevin, it's been great having you on board. Thank you so much for joining us.
I listen to you guys every week, and so I love to sort of give back and sort of offer my insights here. So thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, it's been fantastic. It's been a great episode. We'll invite you back, talk more design stuff, because it just fascinates me. This is kind of your opportunity to talk about anything you have going on, anything with Tumblr, whatever you like. Where can people find what you're doing, and what should they know?
So you see across the bottom there, I've got my Tumblr link, and you can find some like weird pictures of stuff that I post. On my Twitter, I go there for developer stuff. I try and answer some questions there if I can. I write some articles every once in a while. But then lastly, I guess one of the things that I want to do more of at Tumblr is more of this experimental design and more of this design to push the platform forward. And to do that, we actually need some more people. We have... The iOS team is just outpacing us, and I need some more guys to help me sort of keep pace with iOS and sort of do stuff on Android first that iOS can't even think of. So if you're an Android developer, if you're interested in Android development, please reach out to me or check out tumblr.com/jobs to see if anything there piques your interest. I'd love to have a chat with you and talk shop with you guys.
Right on. What is that site again? It's tumblr.com/jobs.
/jobs.
All right.
Try and keep it simple.
How is life with Yahoo?
Things are pretty good. I have no complaints. You would think that now the website would turn purple and all of our logos would be all awful, but no. Yahoo has been immensely great to us. They give us the freedom to do what we think is right, and I think that's it's been great for everyone.
That's important.
I've been really happy since the acquisition.
Right on. Right.
Excellent. That's all you could ever ask for.
Good Absolutely. To hear that.
Cool stuff. Well, thank you again, Kevin. We'll be in touch. We'd love to have you back. Ron.
Yes, sir.
What about you?
Yeah, you can go find all my stuff at about.me/RonXO, where I got links to my Twitter, my Facebook, and Instagram, and all that fun stuff. Google Plus, google.com/plusRonRichards. That's where I'm at. And by day, you can check out imagecomics.com, where we got some great comic books that you can download DRM-free from our website, as well as get in your local comic book store. So, yeah, good times at Image. So.
Excellent. All right. And Gina, how about you? What's the news?
By day, I build an app called ThinkUp. It's social media analytics for humans. You should go check it out. Signups are open to the public now. We're rocking and rolling. We're constantly improving. And when I'm not building ThinkUp, and then I'm not doing AAA, I am doing This Week in Google here on the Twit Network with Leo and Jeff. And that airs tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. So you should come watch, because sometimes we talk about Android on This Week in Google too.
You do a lot. I love it. And Brian? What you got? Surprise us.
Aside from being not prepared?
Yeah.
Yeah, as you can see, I had my input ready. I've got Gina floating in the right-hand corner, and I don't have my lower third. There we go.
There you go.
I do like, though, when you move your head and your glasses reflect off the buttons on the TriCaster, it looks like you're a robot.
It's good.
There we go. There we go. It's like you're in Daft Punk.
Maybe I am a robot. But yeah, you can find me at twit.tv/KH, where I host Know How with Padre. And Gina is still floating above me.
Goodbye, Gina.
Get it. Which side are you on? Get. Oh, there we go.
There we go.
It's cool. Whatever.
Sorry. But yeah, enjoy doing the show here on All About Android. And if you want to follow me, I'm at @cranky_hippo on Twitter.
That's right on.
That's about it.
Thank you for all you do, sir.
Hope you feel better, Jason.
Thanks. I actually feel great. It's my voice that's weird. I have no idea what's going on. First, thank you to Theater Monkey. Theater Monkey is always tweaking our wiki at wiki.twit.tv, and we never thank him
for
doing that.
Thank you.
So thank you, because honestly, every week
I use it.
The wiki.twit.tv page, you know, has a new episode, and it's always looking great. And that's thanks to Theater Monkey. So you're doing awesome. Thanks to the chat room as well, because you guys obviously had a lot of input on today's show, and we love you for that. But that is it for this week. Leave us a voicemail, 347-SHOW-AAA. You can send us an email at AAA@twit.tv. You can also put a link to a video there, and we'll have your video play on the show. Twitter, we are at Android Show. We're on Google Plus. We have a community there. Just search for All About Android, and you'll find it. We're on Reddit, twitaaa.reddit.com. We use that to kind of gauge interest on certain stories for the show. You can find our show notes and past episodes, of course, at wiki.twit.tv, as well as twit.tv/AAA for all of the links. And you can catch us live every Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, live.twit.tv. That's it for this week. We'll see you next week on another episode of All About Android.